Welcome to the Economics Explained podcast. I'm your host, Gene Tunney. The topic of this episode is the so-called gig economy. Across the world, we've seen a surge in freelancing and contract work, facilitated by the proliferation of laptops and smartphones, and by web platforms such as Uber and Upwork. The gig economy benefits consumers through lower prices and greater choice. Check out how many local restaurants are participating in Uber Eats, for example. And obviously the gig economy benefits the platform businesses, which have multi-billion dollar valuations. But does the gig economy benefit the workers, the people working gig by gig? This question and others were considered in a conversation I had on 12 October with my good friend Darren Brady Nelson, a professional economist who has worked for many years as a freelancer and contractor. Darren's professional career began in the New South Wales Treasury in the 1990s. In addition to his economic consulting work, Darren has contributed regularly to a variety of publications, including the Cayman Financial Review. He has also served as an advisor to politicians. For instance, in 2017, Darren was an advisor to Queensland Senator Malcolm Roberts. Currently, Darren is in the Midwestern United States and we spoke via Skype. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Darren Brady Nelson, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Gene. Good to be here.
Excellent. Darren, I thought today we could talk about the gig economy. I remember the other day you sent me some images of the sweet workspace you're located at in Milwaukee at the moment, the work lofts, is it? Could you just tell us about where you're basing yourself as a freelancer at the moment?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in the US at the moment, which is my original hometown. And I like to basically work somewhere besides home, you know, just that kind of sort of focuses me better. And so just in walking around the neighborhood that I'm living in, I just stumbled across a sign that said work lofts, looked it up on the internet, quickly found, oh yeah, that's a, you know, a sort of a shared office space. They quickly offered a tour, and then quickly after that offered a 3-day trial for free to see if I liked it. And I did. And so I've signed up on a month-to-month basis to do my work from the work lofts.
Okay. And what type of people are using it? What sort of people are you encountering as you work there?
Yeah, it seems to be all sorts. Like a lot of these places, they combine sort of a hot desk open area with the option, well, in this case, they have like small offices where, you know, one person to maybe two or three people would be in, and they have at least one bigger office with multiple desks in it. So essentially they have three tiers of things that you can purchase. And the type of people, they vary in age from, you know, 20-something through to 50-something, if you like. And male and female, and talking to some of them, again, the sorts of work that people are doing vary quite a bit as well. Two chaps who tend to sit near me, one's an ecologist, sort of freelancing like I do in economics, and another person is an IT person who's a part of a company that's not in Milwaukee. And I have spoken to a couple of people in the offices. There's two people in particular who are working with a company that's actually headquartered in London. So they actually work almost more London hours than they do Milwaukee hours. So it gives you that sort of flexibility.
Yes, I think you find that. So companies look at these co-working spaces as a cheap way to enter into new markets, don't they? And I've seen that myself at, in service offices here in Brisbane, But I see that there are a lot of, you know, companies that just take up a small amount of office space temporarily. But what these work lofts and these co-working spaces like WeWork, they're a cheaper option. And I was stunned by just how much cheaper it seems in the US than it does in Australia. But I guess that's like a lot of things. And I was also stunned by I was impressed by the perks that you get there. I mean, you've got, what was it? You've got beers and sparkling water on tap and you've got free coffee.
Yeah. I was in Canberra, as you know, but obviously the listeners don't know. Sometimes I do set contracts like I did recently for 6 months in Canberra, sitting in the client's office. And, when that kind of ran up, when I finished, but before I left Canberra, I was contemplating, should I do, hang around Canberra and do some of the sort of work I'm doing in Milwaukee there. And I did look at a place that was close by, and it had some of those perks too. I think it was called Whatso, and I think it's a company around Australia. And they had some of those perks. It wasn't quite as good as the one here in Milwaukee. You had to bring your own coffee. They had a coffee machine, but you had to bring your own coffee.
Okay.
But strangely enough, they actually had free booze. So I'm not sure why they were stingy on the coffee, but generous on the booze. But here in Milwaukee, they use one of the nice cafe chains that are in town called Collectivo. So they get their coffee from there. They have some sort of pilsner on tap. Mm. And they also have, that sort of that cold brew coffee on tap. And as you said, sparkling and fresh water. I love sparkling water, so I have a lot of that. And it has other, and it has a nice kitchen and it's kept clean. And, it's just a really pleasant, hipster sort of environment.
Yes. And you're recording from a studio there or a booth at the co-working space at the moment. Is that correct, Aaron? So you've got facilities of different kinds, your meeting rooms and as well as hot desks?
Yeah, it's got a big meeting room and a smaller meeting room. It has these two, kind of desks in a booth to do these sorts of things as we're doing now. So you have kind of a soundproof, working both ways so that you're not hearing the outside sounds and people out there aren't hearing you. It's a really great facility. The price isn't really that much cheaper than, say, that place I looked at in Canberra, but it does have more facilities. It's a bit nicer. And a key difference, one thing that turned me off of joining Whatso in Canberra, it was really loud. People, they didn't have these sort of booths. So people literally who were call center people who were just constantly having, that's just, for me, that's just, I don't need like a library quiet place to work in, but just, a more professional environment. And this one was more professional than the place I saw in Canberra.
Okay, that's good. Well, I've often wondered about what it means for your productivity. So I think that sort of environment would be good if you're collaborating with colleagues. Say if you're in a startup, for example, and you've always got to huddle with your team. But I've often wondered whether that would be good for me or good for, people like us who have to do deep work. But it looks like you're making it work for yourself, which is good. Generally, do you think are you happy with your level of productivity co-working spaces?
Yeah, look, it's always going to be horses for courses, and each individual will be different, and each individual over time will be different. So for me right now, my other alternative, two other alternatives is to just work from home. I find myself I get distracted too easily and I'm whatnot. Plus, then you have to go out for coffee somewhere. My other option that I usually have is work from a cafe, but a cafe isn't set up as a work environment. So that's distracting in a different way, with just lots of stuff and conversations and noise happening. So yeah, for me, this, as you said, for us as economists, we often have to delve in deep and need a little bit of quiet. Again, it doesn't have to be library quiet, but not too hectic in the background.
Yeah. Now, Darren, both yourself and myself, we're at the end of the spectrum of freelancing or, you know, we're gig economy workers that actually, you know, I think we do pretty well out of it generally. But there, you know, there's another end of the gig economy spectrum, if you call it, where there are concerns about, well, working conditions and rates of pay. We've seen the rise of companies such as, Uber, for example, and here in Australia we've got Uber Eats here in Australia. We've also got Deliveroo. We've got all the people going around on bicycles and scooters delivering food. And we also have those platforms such as Upwork, where we've got people bidding to do little tasks such as could be proofreading, could be graphic design, all sorts of things. And you're really seeing a lot of those markets that people are – their services are commodities in a way, and we see very prices bid down to competitive rates, which, you know, as economists we say, well, that's great and that's the market working and isn't that all wonderful and it's efficient. We'll get to that later. What I'm wondering is, what has driven the rise of the gig economy, as we call it?
Look, you know, no doubt a number of factors, but I guess two things that pop into my head would be, obviously, technology has got to a point, you know, where it makes this even possible, you know, through the technological platforms. And the other thing is, you know, the economies have been struggling since the GFC, and, you know, there hasn't been as many normal jobs out there. So this has actually been great. It's actually bypassed some of the sort of like barriers, be it financial or regulatory, to having more jobs than we would like to see. So basically, yeah, you know, supply and demand. On the supply side, the technology has made it possible. And on the demand side, there's been people looking for work, sometimes highly skilled people such as ourselves, through to less skilled people looking for jobs. So probably those two factors. No doubt there's a bunch of other stuff going on as well. And, you know, the listeners out there, Gene sent me a quite an informative paper from the OECD, which goes through, you know, probably in more detail, not just those two factors I mentioned, but some of the other ones.
Yes, that's a really good paper, that one. So, Darren, you mentioned the importance of the economic situation, and I think that's true about the, you know, the situation since the financial crisis, whereby you know, we've had economies recover, but they haven't really regained the vigor that they had pre-financial crisis. And so, therefore, you do have a lot of people, they're self-employed, they may not always be 100% utilized, and so... Yeah, the gig economy is a way that they can, you know, well, they can keep employed. They're giving themselves a job, but they're not always 100% utilized for sure. What about social factors? I mean, one thing we've seen, particularly with the rise of all the tech firms, and we've seen, you know, people like Tim Ferriss, who's been advocating the 4-hour work week, and we've seen this growing interest in people being entrepreneurs or, you know, being in charge of their own destiny. Is there something to that? Is that social trend important?
Well, it depends on what you mean by social trend, I suppose, or an importance. I think it's good for the most part. You know, this world isn't perfect. You can always find something that's not, you know, to people's satisfaction. But I think this offers the flexibility. No one's obviously being forced as such to get involved in the gig economy. If, you know, for the most part, this is, you know, this is great for employees, you know, particularly employees who either didn't have a job at all, or for a lot of these people who, you know, they had either a part-time job or maybe a full-time job that just, they weren't really earning enough money to get by or to really sort of like, you know, start saving, et cetera. And this has really helped out a lot of people, obviously, in the world of Uber and all sorts of areas, to get that extra income or that income that they just didn't even have. Because, you know, obviously, you know, relying on welfare, as you know, in Australia, the welfare payments are pretty low anyway. So, you know, you're lucky if you could survive on that as one person. And even if you can, it's not a great life to have. People then obviously turn to sort of alcohol and other addictions, and sadly even to crime. So I think, you know, overall this is socially, if you want to somehow separate that from the economics, this is also a net positive so far.
Absolutely. So you made a good point about how these gig economy platforms are being used as to provide secondary incomes. And I think we see that, like, in Australia, we see a lot of semi-retired people or retired people even driving Uber. And partly that's for the money, but it's also partly for the social connection. I think that's something that, if I remember, Scott Pape in his that book that was, well, it's still huge, The Barefoot Investor, and he recommends that retired people, you know, go and drive Uber, do Uber, because it, you know, helps with their finances, and it also keeps them active. So
I think there's definitely something in that. I wouldn't recommend it, say, for my father, because he's such a bad driver. But yeah, for most, it's probably, yeah, it's a good option. And just an interesting thing. It's not quite along the topic you're talking about, but I've noticed an interesting thing as a freelancer. I travel to multiple countries, particularly between Australia and the U.S. and multiple cities within Australia and the U.S. And I've noticed, you know, the markets are very different, you know, maybe not so much on the demand side, but the people who drive Uber can be very different. Like, for instance, I noticed in Brisbane, a lot of Uber drivers increasingly are just taxi drivers or former taxi drivers. Interestingly enough, in Milwaukee, there's still the original intent, I suppose, of the Uber driver, which is not a taxi driver, just a normal person who has a car. I prefer that. You know, obviously, I'm never going to suggest that regulations should say taxi drivers can't drive Uber or anything like that. But as a customer who would, you know, like many customers, who was very unhappy with taxis for various reasons, because they were high priced, the quality of service was bad, etc. You know, it was nice to get away from taxis. And at least in Milwaukee, that's still the case.
Yeah. Look, one thing I've noticed about the gig economy platforms in Brisbane and who's using them is they provide a lot of opportunities for the international students who are in Brisbane. So Australia's had an international student boom. I don't know if you've got that in Milwaukee, but we seem to be, you know, very popular with students from throughout East Asia, from India, and increasingly from South America. And so what you tend to see with at Uber, we see lots of, you know, Indian students, and then also in delivering for Uber Eats, we see young Indians, also Brazilians, and you know, other international students. So it's providing employment opportunities for those people. One thing I wanted to talk about is the taxi industry. You mentioned the taxi industry, and there are two things I think are interesting there. Well, I mean, first, we see the real benefits to the consumer of the gig economy platforms, because when Uber came in here in Brisbane, I think the compared with the price of an equivalent, you know, to go an equivalent distance, Uber was something like 30% cheaper. And so not only do I get that benefit from paying a lower fare, but I'm also using it many, you know, I'm taking many more Uber trips than I would have taken taxi trips. And so I really get that benefit from that. It's just extraordinary. I mean, did you see similar drops in prices in the US, Darren? Do you know the data on that at all?
I don't know the data, but I, you know, can sort of talk about some of my personal experience.
Yes.
For instance, I was in Chicago a week ago for a conference, an annual dinner at the Heartland Institute, and I stayed on to sort of just, you know, revisit Chicago because it's just a great city. So when I took a bus, there's basically a bus between the Milwaukee Airport and Chicago O'Hare Airport. So I thought that might be a good way to get down there. And then O'Hare Airport, you know, isn't too far away from where the dinner was going to be. And I actually looked at taking an Uber, but it was just so busy at the time. But I did see what the estimated price was going to be. And then I ended up taking a taxi. And it was basically the Uber was actually well and truly 50% less than the taxi price, you know, for this particular trip at that particular time. Now, taxis obviously they're not particularly innovative with their pricing, whereas obviously Uber can vary according to, you know, obviously how busy it is and how many drivers are around. But still, that I think, you know, I've noticed that in the U.S. that usually you're going to save something like 50%, if not more, you know, versus taking a taxi.
Wow. So I think as economists, we both understand that the reason the taxis were able to, you know, charge so much traditionally was because the government or the municipality imposed a restriction on the number of taxi licenses. So they're restricting the supply of taxis. And now what Uber's done is Uber's come in and it's disrupted the markets in different localities. And it's essentially just said, well, we're not going to bother about your regulations. We've got a great product that people can hook up to on their phones and they're going to love it. And we're just going to ignore the regulation. And eventually you will have to cave in and allow us in. And that appears to have worked for Uber. Now, ironically, what's happened here in Queensland, at least, is that to now we've had other companies that have come in that are now taking advantage of the new regulatory environment. So maybe Uber, you know, it won't be able to have established itself as a dominant platform. That's another issue. What the one I did want to chat about with you is, I mean, what do we think about this strategy? What do you think about this strategy of the tech companies is move fast and break things to just go in and disrupt markets and just ignore existing regulations? Do you think that's healthy for our society?
Yes. Okay. Well, for the listeners, I'm a free market economist, and you'd be lucky to find another economist who's more free market than me. Look, you know, yeah, they, as you pointed out, you know, this taxi industry was just, you know, I had like socialist friends who were very pissed off with the taxi industry. So, you know, this government monopoly, essentially, it was ripe to be bypassed. Now, the tech companies, they obviously didn't come in and break any laws or anything like that. You know, they just took advantage of the situation, which they should. I mean, that's what you want when a market's. When a market or, you know, a firm within a market just isn't, you know, providing what the customers want at a reasonable price, well, yeah, you want entry. That's what you want. So, and, you know, some cities, you know, I can't remember, I don't recall anybody in Australia doing this, but there's definitely been cities in the U.S. who've made life very difficult for Uber and Lyft, which is the main competitor to Uber in the U.S. I think Austin, Texas was one of those, but there was a number. Most cities were pretty good, as I understand, but and obviously some of that was coming from the taxi industry itself. But yeah, obviously the taxi industry is really city by city, as it is in Australia for the most part too. So, you know, some were more successful at, you know, giving angst to Uber than others.
Yes, that's right. So I think London might be looking at a Uber ban, if I remember. I'll have to dig that up and put it in the show notes. And then they're also, well, we've seen various governments look at whether we should be imposing entitlements. Well, we should be requiring platform companies such as Uber to allow, you know, make allowances for the entitlements of their workers. Well, you know, so Uber will be saying all of their drivers, they're all independent contractors, so we don't need to, you know, pay workers' compensation, or we don't have to provide sick leave and long service leave and all that sort of thing. I think different governments have been looking in that, but I don't think, you know, we haven't really seen much action on that front, probably because governments realise that, well, you know, this is something that consumers are really enjoying. They're getting a lot of benefit out of, and also the people who are working in those platforms are too. So I think governments are conscious that they'd have to be really careful with any sort of regulation that they do impose on these platforms. Just to, you know, as the final issue for discussion, Darren, I thought I'd read out a quote from the OECD. So the OECD Economics Department, in a recent working paper, some of their researchers have noted that looking forward, the main challenges for public policies will be to promote strong competition for the market while improving working conditions for platform workers. Instead of strictly enforcing existing rules, this will in many cases require adapting policy settings in product, market and labour markets to the needs of the digital economy. So what I'm wondering about is, should we be concerned about exploitation of gig economy workers who may be working for very low rate, effective rates of pay? Like if you look at the Uber Eats delivery people, I mean, they're only earning a few dollars for every delivery that they make. And some of that work looks like it's pretty hard. They're having to ride around the cities with those big backpacks full of food. Should we worry about that, or should we worry about exploitation? I think you answered that question previously. I think we've got a good understanding of how you'll answer it. But do you have any thoughts on whether this is something we should be concerned about?
Well, no, for the most part. Look, you know, these are voluntary arrangements. There's a lot of these kind of like muddle-headed assumptions that sit behind these sorts of things. I mean, ideas of exploitation are, you know, obviously very Marxian in nature. And I think they've been shown not to be coincide with the reality of a reasonably competitive functioning market. So often the alternative for these people is to not have that extra income or not have that job. So to suggest that, oh, your wages are too low, we all know what, I mean, virtually any economist from any school of thought, except for the Marxian one, will know, like, you know, if you start doing things like minimum wages, well, all you're doing is really creating unemployment. So obviously, again, another hidden Marxian concept, although it's not strictly Marxian, this is also go back to classical economists, Adam Smith, et cetera. Obviously, this kind of misunderstanding of what value is, you know, assuming that it's labor, and in particular, how hard you work, or, you know, strictly how many hours. No, that's not how value is determined in a marketplace. But again, I think the most important part is, you know, these people are adults in a voluntary setting, and not just obviously in the gig economy, but, you know, it just hits home in the gig economy because, you know, the way it's just kind of come out of nowhere. And, you know, for the most part, people are very happy on both sides, you know, people who work for these companies and people who use these, you know, the services of these companies are pretty happy. They're happy with the prices. They're happy with the service. Not all the time. You know, I could give you a list of times I was unhappy with Uber, times I was unhappy with Uber Eats. But again, no one's forced me to use those. There's many alternatives. I mean, I'm not talking about just Lyft or Deliveroo, you know. Get in your car, go get something. You know, there's so many options that people have. And I think the more options, the better. Because that's actually what, you know, people think of competition mistakenly in the way that people think about sports. You know, then they often start thinking in terms of win-lose. No, competition in a marketplace is not at all like competition in sports. It's win-win. And it's really choice. You know, what you're saying, competition is choice. So they're just offering more choice. They didn't take away choices from you. Taxis are still there. You can still hop in your car, et cetera. People can still choose traditional jobs, or they can have a traditional job plus a gig economy job. So it's just offering employees and consumers more choices, and that's a good thing.
Good stuff. I liked how you talked about the voluntary exchange, the free exchange. We're talking about gains from trade. And we've known about the benefits of that, well, at least back to Adam Smith, probably from before that. So absolutely, it's a great thing. I like the fact you mentioned Karl Marx before. I thought that was interesting. It just got me thinking. I mean, Karl Marx wouldn't have anticipated the gig economy. So Karl Marx's theory, I mean, he had the theory about the capitalists and the proletariat, didn't he? So he imagined the capitalist owning the factories and employing thousands of workers. I mean, you know, let's say Henry Ford or something with 100,000 people at that. What was that big plant he had in, was that River Rouge?
River Rouge.
And so, you know, Marx had a different vision of the economy. This is completely incompatible with Marx's vision of the economy. We're not going to have the, you know, these, well, there aren't, I don't know if there are unions for gig economy workers, but they don't see, they don't have that, they don't see themselves aligned against, you know, the evil capitalists as people. That,
well,
or do well, they?
The, well, the OECD paper, to its credit, actually covers this. They don't mention Marx, okay. but they do talk about the fact that, it may not have been the OECD paper. There was another paper that we shared back and forth from the Mises Institute about the same topic. So it might have been that one. But the point is that the lines have been blurred. Basically, the labor and capital are the same people. Mm. You know, when you're an Uber driver, you're both. You're a capitalist and you're supplying labor at the exact same time. So, you know, that would probably make Marx's head spin.
Absolutely. Now, just thinking back on that point about the benefits of voluntary exchange, the benefits of choice, I think what's great about these gig economy platforms is that, I mean, these platforms have, you know, they've facilitated a lot of trade, a lot of opportunities that, you know, wouldn't previously been exploited. And I think that's one of the things to their credit. Look, I don't know, there may be some regulatory issues that need to be looked at in the future. I know you'd probably disagree with that, but...
Oh, no, I just look at it from a different point of view. Rather than often regulators, and sadly a lot of economists, are always looking for ways to impose existing regulations on new sort of like industries or, you know, like on the gig economy. Well, how about we revisit and maybe remove stuff from the competitors, from the competitors with the gig economy, so make life a bit easier. And, you know, actually revisit, because a lot of things, they put these regulations in place usually with no cost benefit analysis whatsoever, or even if they did, it might be time to revisit it. So like maybe at the time you could justify a regulation at a certain time and place, and it's no longer justified. So, you know, let's look to remove stuff. So we talked about how a lot of economies weren't doing all that great really since GFC. Well, one big exception to that is the US, particularly the past 2 to 3 years. And part of their success has been doing exactly that, looking at regulations going, you know what, let's get rid of this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the tax cuts have helped a bit there too, haven't they? So, yeah, absolutely.
That too. But the red tape was probably actually a bigger reform than even the tax cuts.
Okay, we should pick that up in a future episode, Darren. I think that's been terrific, and I've really enjoyed having that chat with you and learning a bit more about your, particularly about your co-working space in Milwaukee. That sounds really great, and we'll catch up again soon. So thanks again, Darren. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you.